page 706 if you're using the Pew Bibles. Go Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes. Hopefully you're getting to know this, where this more obscure book is. I've been working through this book in the morning, and so I hope to finish it up over the next 6 weeks here in the evening. There's an outline on the handout that you were given. And if you use that outline, just take note that I changed my introduction, so the rest of the outline's good. Just disregard what I wrote there for the introduction. This book takes a very realistic view of life under the sun, life on earth. It faces the very hard reality that apart from God, life here is meaningless. In this section, we see how the physical world, life under the sun, if that's all we're looking at, that it really sets us up for disappointment, failure, and confusion. So I'm going to read, starting at verse 10 of chapter 5, and I'm going to read through all of chapter 6. So this is God's word given to us to build up our faith and our love for God. So let's listen. Verse 10, chapter 5. He who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves wealth with his income. This also is vanity. When goods increase, they increase who eat them. And what advantage has their owner but to see them with his eyes? Sweet is the sleep of a laborer, whether he eats little or much, but the full stomach of the rich will not let him sleep. There is a grievous evil that I've seen under the sun. Riches were kept by their owner to his hurt, and those riches were lost in a bad venture. He is father of a son, but he has nothing in his hand. As he came from his mother's womb, he shall go again, naked as he came, and shall take nothing for his toil that he may carry away in his hand. This also is a grievous evil. Just as he came, so shall he go. And what gain is there to him who toils for the wind? Moreover, all his days he eats in darkness, in much vexation and sickness and anger. Behold, what I have seen to be good and fitting is to eat and drink and find enjoyment in all the toil with which one toils under the sun the few days of his life that God has given him, for this is his lot. Everyone also to whom God has given wealth and possessions and power to enjoy them, and to accept his lot and rejoice in his toil. This is the gift of God. For he will not much remember the days of his life, because God keeps him occupied with joy in his heart. There is an evil that I've seen under the sun. It lies heavy on mankind. A man to whom God gives wealth, possessions, and honor, so that he lacks nothing of all he desires, yet God does not give him power to enjoy them, but a stranger enjoys them. This is vanity. It is a grievous evil. If a man fathers 100 children and lives many years, so that the days of his years are many, but his soul is not satisfied with life's good things, and he also has no burial, I say that a stillborn child is better off than he. For it comes in vanity and goes in darkness, and in darkness its name is covered. Moreover, it has not seen the sun nor known anything, yet it finds rest rather than he. Even though he should live 1,000 years twice over, yet enjoy no good, do not all go to one place? All the toil of man is for his mouth, yet his appetite is not satisfied. For what advantage has the wise man over the fool? And what does the poor man have who knows how to conduct himself before the living? Better is the sight of the eyes than the wandering of the appetite. This also is vanity and a striving after wind. Whatever has come to be has already been named, and it is known what man is, and that he is not able to dispute with one stronger than he. The more words, the more vanity. And what is the advantage to man? For who knows what is good for man while he lives the few days of his vain life, which he passes like a shadow? For who can tell man what will be after him under the sun? That's the Word of God. There are lots of ways that we learn in life. We can learn by reading things or sitting in a classroom, listening to lectures. You students do that a lot right now. You read books, you sit through lectures. So that's one way to learn. You also learn by doing. We learn by internships, through apprenticeships, and those are great ways to learn as well. Another way that we learn is through failures and disappointments. In fact, I've heard some teachers and mentors and bosses will set up their students or their employees to fail in order to get them to stretch their thinking, to get them to think on a whole nother level. I know a professor who puts three different kinds of questions on his exams. The first level of questions are those questions that everyone should know. These are questions that they've done either in homework or in class. They shouldn't be a problem. And then there's a set of questions that are meant to test the outer limits of their understanding. They're meant to take the principles that you've learned and apply them to new situations, new problems. So they stretch the student to think. And then the third group of questions are questions that seem to set the student up for failure. Questions that the student really shouldn't quite get. The professor asks these questions to see how they approach the question, how they handle the challenge, how to see their thinking process work. And the reason they ask these questions is that they're meant to push the student to understand or to begin to think beyond what they really understand, to get them to think beyond the realm of beyond their understanding. In some ways, God is like this professor. There are parts of life where it seems like we're set up to fail. There's lots of parts to life where things that we all know. We know 2 plus 2 is 4. We know that we need to eat to have nourishment. We know these things. There's also more complicated things in life that we have to study in order to get to know. But then there's questions in life that just seem to not have an answer. Questions like why we're here, or what's your purpose, or how can I find real satisfaction and joy in life? And if we try to answer these questions by looking just at the physical realm alone, it'll lead to disappointment, failure, and confusion. The book of Ecclesiastes asks the big questions of life, that's for sure. Solomon is telling us here that if you pursue this physical world, if you pursue specifically material possessions and wealth as a means of security and satisfaction and joy, your life will be a tangled mess of frustration, disappointment, failure, confusion. If we only look at the physical realm to be satisfied, then we are set up to fail. And it's these disappointments and failures that force us to contemplate the spiritual. In some ways, God has set you up to fail. He set you up for disappointment, failure, and confusion to get you to think beyond this physical world in order for you to learn to find your joy and satisfaction in Him. And once you find your joy and satisfaction in Him, it frees you from the frustration and disappointment so that you can actually enjoy what God has given you here in this life, to really enjoy them the way God has intended. You kids, I want you to draw a picture tonight. I want you to draw a picture of one person who has lots of money, but he's really sad. And then I want you to draw a picture of another guy who doesn't have much, but he loves God, and he's really happy. We're to find our joy. Find your joy in God, and it will free you to really enjoy this world as He intended. The major theme in this section that Solomon, in the book of Ecclesiastes, that Solomon is reflecting on is the idea of material possessions and money and riches and things. His focus is on material possessions, but the concepts that he's teaching here can really be applied to any aspect of life here on earth, any realm, or any aspect of the physical realm. life under the sun. So you particularly may not be inclined to set your heart on physical material possessions, riches. But maybe it's something else. Maybe it's recognition for a job well done, or a good family, or a better marriage. And so as we work through this, I want you to apply this principle that we learn here to your situation and how it really applies to everything under the sun. So when you pursue material possessions and as a means of satisfaction and joy and peace in life, it sets you up for disappointment, failure, and confusion. So I want to think about these three things: disappointment, failure, and confusion. First, material possessions set us up for disappointment. Disappointment is really the theme of verses 11 to 17 of chapter 5, or 10 to 17. He says that he who loves money will not be satisfied with money, and he who loves wealth will not be satisfied with his income or his salary. They'll be disappointed. If you're looking for wealth to satisfy you, then you're setting yourself up for huge disappointment. Disappointment comes when our expectations far exceed reality. So we expect this much out of something, but the reality is that it gives us about that much. It's easy to have the expectation that money and possessions will make us feel good. It'll give us a sense of security, of peace, of identity, whatever, satisfaction, you name it. It'll give us something that we long for. Our expectations are high, and so we go for that big paying job, or we go shopping, we get the latest fashions and the fads and the gadgets and gizmos, because we think, well, that's going to give me something that I need. It's going to make me happy. That's our expectation. But the problem is that the reality is that money and possessions cannot grant you such things. And therefore, it leads to disappointment. I remember in 1990 a song coming out called I Want to Be Rich. The song's about a guy who's in lots of debt. He has bills to pay, and he dreams of being rich, and so he plays the lottery. He wants lots and lots of money, and he says at the end of the song that he wants to be rich because he thinks it'll lead to peace, or to love, peace, and happiness. Wealth will lead to a satisfying, full life. But when those expectations don't match reality, we come crashing to the ground. I read the story of a woman in England who won the lottery for $2.8 million. She said this: I hoped that winning the lottery would make me so happy that I'd forget all the pains and struggles of my past. She thought it might help her forget the pain of the abuse that she suffered. It would be the answer to her problems. But she said it didn't. And in 9 short years, she blew that $2.8 million on plastic surgery, parties, and lots and lots and lots and lots of drugs. We have this high expectation. Well, if I have enough money, then I'll be satisfied. I'll be happy. It'll drown away my pains. Or we're simply set up for disappointment. Solomon says in verse 10 that those who increase in wealth also have increased demands on their wealth. When you're wealthy, there's lots of people coming to knock on your door asking you for your money. People stop looking at you as a person and look at you as a means to achieve their goals or fund their latest venture. He says in verse 12 that the common worker, the laborer, who's not wealthy, sleeps peacefully every night. But the rich man can't sleep at all. He sort of conveys this idea. He has a full stomach, but he can't sleep. It conveys the idea of indigestion or worry and anxiety. The more you have, the more you have to worry about. The more it keeps you up at night. He also says that what you have, you can't take with you when you die. You work hard, but you just leave it behind for someone else. And he says in verse 17 that with riches and possession also comes darkness, vexation, sickness, and anger. We think it'll lead to love, peace, and happiness, but Solomon, who knows what he's talking about, he had all the wealth he wanted, perhaps even the richest man on the earth at that moment, during his lifetime. He says that riches and possessions bring darkness, irritation, sickness, and anger. I can identify with that, or I can understand that. There have been a number of times in my life when I've gotten something nice. Something so nice that I was worried that it was going to get messed up. And so I was sort of anxious when other people are around. Acquiring new things brings new anxieties. And then when it does get up, when it does get messed up, and I get annoyed or I get angry, it doesn't lead to peace, love, and happiness. It leads to anxiety and anger. Riches and possessions are going to disappoint you. If your heart is set on the latest gadget, the newest clothes, the latest fad, the bigger salary, a big retirement account, you're setting yourself up for disappointment. Or maybe it's not riches that you're looking, that you're tempted to look for as the answer to your problems. Maybe it's something else in this realm, a relationship, a marriage, a job, recognition, wanting people to like you. You think these things will make you happy and give you peace, but in every single case, they will just let you down. If you're looking to the physical realm for satisfaction, happiness, and peace, you're setting yourself up for disappointment every single time. So Solomon shows that material possessions only lead to disappointment. He also shows how in this physical realm we're really set up not just for disappointment, but also set up for failure. He's taken his first thought of disappointment and sort of carrying it a step further. Not only are we set up for disappointment, but we don't even have the power to enjoy the things that God has given to us the way we're supposed to. So we're set up to fail from the beginning to really appreciate this physical realm the way God intends. We're set up to fail. In chapter 6, he says, God may give all kinds of wealth and possessions to a man so that he lacks nothing that he desires. He has everything, but God doesn't give him the power to enjoy those things. God sets him up to fail, to appreciate what he has. I remember a long time ago, it was my younger sister's birthday, Anna's birthday. Anna is deaf. She can't hear anything. She had meningitis when she was in the orphanage in Colombia when she was a year and a half old. So she can't hear a thing. One of her friends, though, someone who is partially deaf, so went to the deaf school, gave her a gift for her birthday, and it was a cassette tape with music on it. That doesn't make any sense. I couldn't figure out why this deaf friend gave my sister a cassette tape. I think my deaf, or her deaf friend could hear a little bit and so could listen to some of the music. It could be great music. It could be the greatest music ever written, ever produced. But Anna won't be able to appreciate it because she can't hear. You wouldn't take a blind man to an art museum. It doesn't matter how great the art is. He won't really be able to appreciate them. He can't enjoy them. It would only frustrate them. Why would you give me something that I can't enjoy? Well, God, in a similar way, gives wealth and riches and all kinds of things to all kinds of people, unbelieving people. He gives massive amounts of wealth and riches to drug lords, wicked people. They have everything that they want, but it's like giving a cassette tape to a deaf person. They have everything that they desire, but they don't actually have the ability to enjoy what God has given to them. They're set up to fail from the very beginning to appreciate the good gifts in this physical realm. Hugh Hefner, founder of Playboy magazine, has all the women he wants, but he doesn't actually have the power to enjoy them. It's like taking a blind person to an art museum. Solomon knows this by experience. He at one time set his heart on riches and possessions. Wealth captivated him. And God gave him everything except the power to really enjoy them. And they were simply a source of irritation, frustration, disappointment. God set him up to fail. He couldn't really appreciate what God had given to him. God is setting up Hugh Hefner to fail along with everyone else who seeks their ultimate satisfaction and fulfillment in anything under the sun. Solomon goes on there in chapter 6 in verse 3 and following. He said you could live the longest, best life. You could have hundreds of children, which was the concept of prosperity. If you have lots of kids, you could have it all, but not be satisfied. And it's so frustrating that Solomon says it's better for a stillborn child is better off than this man who's frustrated with the things of this world. It's such an exercise in futility that it'd be better to not even have lived through it. So I ask you, are you setting yourself up to fail? Have you set your heart on all these things in the world, on a relationship, on material possessions, in such a way that you're really setting yourself up to fail, that you can't really appreciate them the way God intends anyway? If you don't know God as the great satisfier of your soul, as your great joy, then yes, you're setting yourself up to fail. God has given you good gifts, but you don't have the power to enjoy them. So when you pursue material possessions, that means, when you pursue material possessions as a means of satisfaction and joy and peace, it sets us up first for disappointment, second for failure, and finally it sets you up for confusion. From verse 6 and following, Solomon rattles off, this is in chapter 6, verse 6, Solomon rattles off all the questions that this idea raises in his mind. Even if you lived 1,000 years twice over, but never really enjoyed anything, what does it matter anyway? Everyone's going to die in the end. It's a recurring theme here in Ecclesiastes. Everyone's going to die, so what's the point? What advantage is there? What advantage does a wise man have over a fool? Rhetorical question. Answer, nothing. Does a poor man gain any advantage by learning to conduct himself in the world? Not really. Verse 11, he says, the more words, the more vanity. What advantage is there to a man? Who knows what is good for a man to do while he lives the few days of his vain life, which passes like a shadow? For who can tell a man what this world will be like after he dies? If we are set up for disappointment in our possessions, and we're set up for failure because we don't even have the power to enjoy and appreciate the good things that we have, then what's the point to life? It's an exercise in futility. If the things here don't satisfy us, then it raises all kinds of confusing questions. Questions that can't be answered in this physical realm. It's like sitting down to take an exam in algebra, and you look over the exam, and it's all calculus, and you have no idea. Questions you have no clue about. You can't answer them. You don't have the information. You sit there confused. It's like your professor set you up to fail, to be confused, to be frustrated. Well, this is exactly what God has done to us. God has created us and created the entire physical realm in such a way that if we look to the physical realm alone to give us love, peace, and happiness, then we're set up for disappointment, failure, and confusion. God has set you up to fail. Why would He do that? Why would God set us up for such disappointment in life? Such failure, such confusion. To get us to realize that there's something more. To get us to look beyond the physical realm. To get us to think about the missing factor. To get our minds directed toward Him. There's a reason why your job and your marriage and your home and your bank account and your retirement account don't satisfy you. There's a reason why you're always wanting something more out of life. It's so that you'll look beyond this physical realm and look to God. So that we will see that He is the only one who will ultimately and eternally satisfy us and give us joy. In the last paragraph of chapter 5, starting in verse 18, Solomon basically says that the reason why we struggle with disappointment and failure and confusion over the things of this world is because we're missing the central factor in it all. Central factor is God. He says God is the one who gives you joy. When you know God, when you find your great joy and delight in God, then and only then will you really be able to enjoy the gifts that God has given to you in this realm. The ultimate reason why you have been disappointed in various things, disappointed in the possessions, the jobs, the relationships that you have, is because God has slipped to the side of your thinking. God has dropped out of the center of our lives. The reason why we're frustrated and confused is because God is not our everything. The entire Bible speaks about this concept that God is our great gift. God is our great reward. He is our portion. He is our delight. He's our friend, our sustainer. God is the one who fills us with peace, a peace that surpasses understanding. God gives us strength and courage under pressure. He's the majestic one who fills us with joy. God loved us so much that He sent His Son to die for us. That whoever believes in Him gets God. We get life with God. Through Jesus, our sins are forgiven and we are at peace with God. He's our great gift, our great reward, our portion, our delight, our friend. He does everything that this physical world cannot do. Through Jesus, God takes His rightful place in our lives, at the center of our lives, and we see that He is the one who gives us life and breath in all things. And then, only when God is at the center of life, only then can we rightly enjoy the many gifts that God has given to us. He says in verse 19 of chapter 5, "Everyone to whom God has given wealth and possessions and power to enjoy them and to accept his lot and rejoice in his toil, this is the gift of God." When God is your joy, you can then find joy in every aspect of life. When you find God as your great satisfier, the satisfier of your soul, He gives you the power to enjoy the gifts that He gives here on earth. Solomon says in verse 18, "It's good and fitting to eat and drink and find enjoyment in your work during the days that God has given you." And verse 19 says that wealth and possession and power to enjoy them in the work that you do is no longer a disappointment. It no longer sets you up for failure. It no longer is a frustration because you see it as the gift of God. And then verse 20 says that you won't remember the days of your life, meaning you won't remember the struggles and the heartaches of your life because you'll be occupied with joy in your heart. God will be the joy in your heart. Once God becomes the center of your life through Jesus Christ, it changes your entire outlook on wealth and possessions and work and relationships and everything else under the sun. Instead of seeing these things as attempts or ways to gain love or joy and happiness for yourself, they become means of serving God. It gives us this perspective that what we have is not really our own, but it belongs to God and He simply entrusted it to our care, so it's not ours to have or ours to lose. Once you have that frame of mind, then you can really be freed to enjoy these things the way God intends. If you pursue material possessions as a means of security and satisfaction, your life will be a wreck, filled with disappointment, failure, and confusion. And God set it up this way. He set you up for these things so that your mind would be directed toward Him. And when we find our love and joy and happiness in God and not money, that's when you'll be able to release that white-knuckled grip on those things that you so treasure. And you hold them in an open hand, using them as instruments to serve the King. You'll use them and be able to enjoy them the way God intended. During this series in Ecclesiastes, I've been pulling more from C.S. Lewis, or pulling more frequently from him, and He wrote in one of his letters this kind of concept. He says this: "When I have learned to love God better than my earthly dearest, I shall love my earthly dearest better than I do now. But if I learn to love my earthly dearest at the expense of God and instead of God, I shall be moving towards the state in which I shall not love my earthly dearest at all. When first things are put first, second things are not suppressed, but increased." This is the concept that Solomon is teaching us here. When you learn to love God first, when He is foremost in your life through Jesus Christ, you will then learn to enjoy and love your spouse, your job, your life, your possessions. But as soon as God slips from the center of your life and something else takes that position, that's when you're again set up for disappointment, failures, and frustrations. When first things are put first, second things are not suppressed, but increased. Find your joy in God through Jesus Christ, and it will free you from frustration and disappointment. It will free you to really enjoy this world as God intended. Let's pray together.